Testing, 1, 2, 3.
Do you please join me in a salute to the flag? I pledge
allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Hello, everyone. This meeting is now called to order. In line with the Borough Seabright's longstanding policy of open government and in compliance with the Open Public Meetings Act, I wish to advise you that adequate notice of this regularly scheduled meeting has been faxed to the Asbury Park Press and other local newspapers on November 24th, 2014. In each instance, the date, time, and location of this meeting were provided in the notice. This meeting is open to the public. Council members Bills?
Here.
Keeler?
Present.
Kelly?
Here.
Councilman Lamia?
John?
Here.
Yeah.
Participating via telephone?
We can hear you.
Councilman Lexie?
Here.
Councilman Rooney?
Here.
The first item on our agenda this evening is a presentation from the National Park Service on the rehabilitation of historic buildings at Sandy Hook. We have with us the unit coordinator, Pete McCarthy, and our Seabright resident and committee member, Carolyn Ray.
Thank you, Mayor. Folks, on behalf of the National Park Service, first of all, Mayor, I'd like to thank the Borough of Seabright for inviting us to come out and catch you guys up with where we're at. As you all know, about 2 years ago, we had started with the Fort Hancock 21st Century Committee, which Seabright has two representatives on the board, Carolyn being one and Mr. Conway being the other. And what we're looking to do is the rehabilitation and adaptive reuse of the officers' row buildings up at Fort Hancock in the northern portion of Sandy Hook. Our external affairs officer, John Warren, is going to talk a little bit more about where we are in the process. We've made great strides, and I'll let John fill you in a little bit on that. John?
And thanks to people of Seabright for allowing us to be here today. I enjoy driving through Seabright on my way from Trenton, where I live, to work at Sandy Hook every day. And so for me, the road to Sandy Hook literally goes through Seabright, and it's delightful to be here. We have, for everybody, there are these tear-off sheets which tell basics about the request for proposals. They're on this table, and we only have a few copies of the PowerPoint, so those are up here, and we had a couple here on the table, which is what I'll be using here. First of all, when you think of Sandy Hook, you're probably thinking of beaches. You may be thinking of the piping plover. There it is, right there. And those are important resources that mean a lot to us. We also have over 100 historic structures at Sandy Hook. The National Park Service is charged by a congressional act to take care of these historic sites, and we need to find new ways to do that. We certainly can't use 100 buildings, so we needed some help. So what we did is we asked for the formation of the Federal Advisory Committee, and that requires the approval by the Secretary of the Interior, who chooses the members, including Carolyn Ray, one of our members here. So that was formed in September 2012. That was actually before Hurricane Sandy. Of course, then the hurricane occurred. Didn't really slow us down much. We had our first meeting in January of 2013, and we've had 14 meetings of this committee. The committee brings in expertise that we in uniform don't necessarily have. It includes people with expertise in real estate or natural resources and other issues that are important to Fort Hancock. They've been indispensable. I can't thank them enough for all the energy and new ways of thinking that they brought into helping us figure out how we're going to preserve the buildings at Fort Hancock. And yes, it does say Wadsworth there, and that's not what I meant. I make that switch there mentally. One thing we started with is in late 2013, we decided to issue a request for expressions of interest and just see what the interest was out there in the possible use of buildings at Fort Hancock. And we got 41 written responses. 14 of those were for residences. that, so we had more responses for that than any other type of use. There were 7 for beds and breakfasts. Put those together and that's half of the responses. The rest of them were various nonprofit and for-profit uses that were proposed. And that gave us information that we've never had before. So we used that information and we made a map out of it. We looked at the buildings in the main area of Fort Hancock, where Officers Row is, but also the barracks, the former mess halls, the buildings that are closer to the lighthouse, and decided this needs some zoning. And so we've done that. We've formed a land use map, which is very much a work in progress. But some of Officers Row would be bed and breakfasts. Most of it would be residences, some with the option for offices. And the buildings in back could be for a number of uses, whether they were nonprofit, educational, or commercial. Well, just in what most people think of as Fort Hancock, which is actually the main post of Fort Hancock, we have about 30 or more buildings. We did not feel like we were ready to issue leases for 30 buildings. We felt like we needed to learn more about the process. So let's do it in a more careful, thoughtful way. So what we are doing now, what we have out now, are requests for proposal for a total of 6 buildings. 2 would be for residences, 2 for beds and breakfasts, and 2 for nonprofit organizations. And they would be based upon the land use map that I've described earlier. Those requests for proposals are a lot more intense than what we had with the request for expressions of interest. There's a lot more financial stuff that we're going to be asking, and those will be due Friday, April 17th. So we're giving people a lot of time to do the work to develop their response to that. In the interest of transparency, not only have all of our meetings of Fort Hancock Committee been open to the public, but we also have photographs of many of these buildings available on Flickr, outside and inside. The problem with a lot of the buildings, as you'll see, is that although they're structurally pretty sound, and you can bring in your own people to evaluate that on your own, and you should, the insides need work, and they often need a great deal of work. And that's why we are interested in the lease. The basic idea of the lease is that you lease it, you fix it up, and the money that you're spending to rehabilitate this building according to the Interior Secretary's standards for historic rehabilitation will be used against your rent. It basically means you won't be paying rent for a long time because of what you would be putting into the building. I must stress that the request for proposals are all for leasing buildings. These are National Park Service property. We can't sell your stuff. You own the national parks, so the best we can do is to lease them, and we can lease something for up to 60 years, although it's much more likely that a shorter lease would be granted. Buildings for nonprofit entities would be mainly the barracks, the former barracks, buildings 23, 24, 25, and the former mess halls, which are 55, 56, and 57. Barracks is a large building. It has over 17,000 square feet. If you want to see one of those in its rehabilitated state, visit New Jersey Sea Grant. They've taken one of those buildings. They've done beautiful restoration work to it, and they do outstanding education programs there. That's the kind of thing we'd like to see more of at Fort Hancock and Sandy Hook. We've picked 2 buildings for bed and breakfast leases at this time. One of them is on Officers Row. It's building number 6. And behind that is the Bachelor Officers Quarters, which is building 27, which has a number of bedrooms, and it's really going to be a very nice bed and breakfast in the future. For residential use, people can apply to have anything from buildings 8 to 17. Those are all on Officers Row. They're the lower end. Some of them are captain's quarters, some of them are lieutenant's quarters, which are a little smaller. One is a commanding officer's quarters, which of course is the biggest of all of those on Officers Row. Again, we're only leasing 2 of those, but you can choose from buildings between buildings 8 and 17. We're also going to put some money, and we are finding money as we can, scraping up money as we can, to rehabilitate Building 7. When you go to a place where you're about to buy a home, usually there's a sample home. We want to have a sample home, and Building 7 would be that home. We also want to be able to show how you rehabilitate a building according to the Interior Secretary's standards. And so that's how we're using Building 7 as a demonstration project. And that may end up being a bed and breakfast as well. Now, how do we evaluate these things? There are six criteria for evaluation. There's use, finance, rent, experience, sustainability, and preservation. Three of those are weighted very heavily. Financial gets 30%. Preservation is 25, and experience is 20. Financial means you can afford to do this. This could be very expensive. We want to make sure that people have the funds to be able to do this so that they can finish the job and they can enjoy what they've done. Preservation means being in accordance with the Interior Secretary's standards. And experience means maybe you've done this before. If you have, you'll score a little bit better. But that's not up to me. It's not up to our unit coordinator, Pete McCarthy. It's not up to Carolyn. None of us will be allowed to be on the committee that makes these evaluations. That will be chosen by National Park Service employees outside the park. So there won't be any kind of conflict of interest. Once that happens, we enter into negotiation with the person. There is no set rent. You know, we don't have, this is different from renting an apartment. These are things that need to be negotiated based on the condition of the house and what you're going to do to it. The pilot phase is a way to get ready to lease more buildings. So the purpose of the pilot phase is to demonstrate that we can do it, that we can succeed in this, and then to move on and guide future development. We want to make sure that we make our mistakes early, we learn from them, we move on. It's very likely that we'll find out that we need to do more things with the park. We may need to change those zones that we figured out in land use. Access for people with disabilities is important. Historic standard considerations, infrastructure decisions. These are things that we're going to find out about very quickly in the pilot phase. We also need to consider what kind of staffing we'll have to turn Fort Hancock from buildings that are almost ruins, at least inside, into a vibrant and vital community as it was during its history. Important dates to know, site tours, you see me, you call me, but they're by appointment only. Please do not show up at Sandy Hook hoping that you'll get to see a building, because it's not going to work that way. But if you make an appointment, I will make it work for you. Questions will be submitted by Monday, March 16th. When you have something like this in the Park Service, we collect a number of questions and answer them and make them largely distributed. So Monday, March 16th is the deadline for that submission. The proposals, once again, are due Friday, April 17th. Now, after that, we anticipate a date for selection about 5 weeks after that, but that's a guess. Again, you know, we're not the ones making that decision. And then anticipated lease commencement would be subject to negotiation, because we'll have a lot to talk about, so that'll take a while afterward. That's a really, really quick version of what we're doing to revitalize and reawaken Fort Hancock. But there's a lot of information already out there, both on the Park Service's website and also on the website of the committee. So you'll be able to find out all the meeting minutes of the last 14 meetings. You'll also find reports from recent on back to, I think, 1944, about some from the Army. So there's a lot of information there, and of course, we're always glad to answer questions and to guide you along. But don't take my word for it. We have a resident of Seabright who is on the committee, and Ms. Carolyn Ray is going to tell you for a moment or so why this is important to her.
Hi, everybody. Joining this committee, it was very, very exciting and certainly a privilege. My love for Sandy Hook just as an extension of Seabright, has always been pretty profound. I entered, though, with a little bit of skepticism, especially because of the condition of these buildings. And then post-Sandy, it was like, wow, now what is it really going to look like out there? Take a tour and you are thrown back in time. These buildings are still so structurally sound. They are, maybe not all, but they're just absolutely beautiful from a real estate standpoint, and that's my area on the committee. I really see a tremendous value there. From a personal level, as a Seabrighter, having this extension coming off of Seabright is going to be hopefully a lot of luck and prayers. Something really, really even more special to the area. Revitalizing that community out there is going to be absolutely awesome. But also thinking about the businesses and the housing and things, especially in Seabright and Highlands, all of those construction workers, people who are thinking of moving down there, getting closer to being down there, people stopping, they've got to get food, they have to go out for lunch or dinner. I think Seabright and Highlands are going to reap the majority of the benefits of all of that going on. And we're not talking a 6-month, 1-year, 2-year plan. This is going to be for a long time, people coming through our towns to get that community really together. And I think Seabright could benefit so greatly. If you do have time to schedule a tour or go on the website, 21st Century,
Fort Hancock 21st Century.org. 21st is a 2 and a 1.
2-1, yeah. ST. We also have a Facebook page. Either way, it can get you to more information than you could possibly would soak up a lot of your time. But any of the information, it's pretty easy to navigate through all the toolbars, and anything you want to look up, it's there. But I think that I can't find anything negative coming into our town from this possibility, and hopefully spread the word. We'd like to see some investors come in and grab some of this history and bring it back to life.
There was, of course, a typo with the PowerPoint, which said Fort Wadsworth instead of Fort Hancock. There's another typo on the back of these booklets, which are the requests for proposals, one for residences, one for nonprofits, one for bed and breakfast. They say that they are due Monday, April 17th, which doesn't exist. April 17th is a Friday, so date is right, day of the week, not so much. That's what happens when you're doing three of these really quickly, getting them ready for press. These I'm going to leave with the committee. I'm actually going to leave them on the table so people can look at them. And so if there are questions from the committee or the group, we'd be happy to answer.
Well, to take questions, I'll open it up to questions.
Right here.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
The rent is going to be attributed, okay, on a pro rate to the repair of the building, okay? Knowing years of age on these buildings, is there an environmental problem with lead and asbestos? Because if you look down the road, the cost of that abatement, I mean, you can literally look at 60 years rent rates. Is there a lead or asbestos abatement problem with these buildings?
That is up to you as the potential leaseholder to bring somebody in and make that assessment. I'm certainly not qualified to make the assessment. There have been prior, you know, tests on things like the plaster, for example. There was a worry that there was asbestos in the plaster, and then Eugene Cusey, who's our safety officer, found a previous report and said, no, it's not. There isn't a problem with that. But lead paint, I think you're going to, you know, any old building, as you know, is going to have lead paint in it. I have a 100-year-old building, and that's something you should assume. But, you know, that will be some of the things that you would go over with an architect that you would hire and to have those kind of tests take place in a particular building that you're interested in.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Are there going to be certain specifications of how you can do the building?
Yeah, and I'll answer that one. Yes, sir.
National Park Service, actually, anybody who's got a building that's on the National Register of Historic Places, there's a certain set of standards that the Secretary of Interior, who is the person who is in charge, ultimately in charge of historic preservation, they have certain criteria. For instance, you try to replace or rehabilitate original. If you can't do that, you can replace in kind, but there's certain way that you can replace in kind. And yeah, there is a certain standard. And we call them character-defining features. For instance, in a lot of these buildings, there are pocket doors and there are tin ceilings. So two of those criteria would be you would have to keep those tin ceilings and you would have to keep the pocket doors. But if the plaster walls on the exterior need to be replaced, you can do that, but you do with perhaps sheetrock and a coat that goes over it that would look like plaster.
Yeah, some of those details are going to be fleshed out.
And those details, as time goes on, get fleshed out.
Yeah, the pilot phase.
Yeah. Anybody else? Mayor, thank you very much. Folks, thank you very much for your time. We'll probably be back to see you sometime in June to give you another update after the RFP process is finished.
Okay. Pete, can I just ask, this presentation, can we link it to our borough website, or should we just embed the link for Fort Hancock 21st Century?
You know, I actually have a pen in the car that has a jump drive in the top part of it with that presentation. It will say Fort Wadsworth, but, you know, it's yours.
Right. So well, Ned, how about if we'll get a correction down to you, Mayor?
Thank you very much.
All right, and we'll take care of that.
Okay, we'll just help you get the word out.
Thank you very much. Thank you, folks.
Thank you. Before we start the business of the council meeting this evening, as always, we begin our meetings and end our meetings with remarks to the audience. So before we start, is there anyone who wishes to be heard on any issue? There'll be another opportunity at the end.
At Anchor 400 Ocean Avenue. Bob Maroney and Marianne Maroney asked me to read a letter. They couldn't be here tonight, so I'm just going to read the letter for the record, and then they have copies of the letter for everybody on the council and for the mayor. At the council meeting held on January 20th, 2015, the concern regarding the need for regular town hall meetings was raised. We would like to follow up on that concern by expressing our enthusiastic support. There needs to be regular monthly, bi-monthly, or at the very least quarterly meetings designed for the purpose of your hearing the opinions and concerns of the residents. There are many things being discussed and underway in Seabright, from the seawall, bulkheads, the new Rumson Seabright Bridge, the new beach and municipal facilities, streetscape, beautification, dunes, parking, and on and on. These are all important projects and issues for our town, and you should have and truly want resident input. We know you want to do what is best for our town and what the majority of residents favor. We also know that building consensus is not easy and takes time, but it is the foundation of our political process. We understand that you are all very busy, and probably the last thing you want is another meeting. We also realize that as council members, you make the official decisions for the borough. However, the underlying principle is that you are making these decisions based on the will of the people, but you can't do that unless you know what is on their minds. You know that we attend council meetings on a regular basis, and it's disappointing to see, for the most part, the same attendees. However, we believe that if town meetings were held on a regular schedule with a published agenda and publicized well in advance, that over time, more people will participate. Perhaps each town meeting could be devoted to a particular council person's responsibilities and their subcommittees. Thank you for taking the time to listen. So I'll leave that for all of you. I think that it was on the agenda tonight, but I don't know that you guys are talking about town meetings, but I don't know that they knew that before they were had to go out of town. So I'm going to leave these with you.
I'm just having to pass those down, Charlie, and I'll leave these for over here.
Our Councilwoman Bills needs to leave early this evening, and we have executive session items that affect personnel, which is the committee she chairs. So in order to accommodate that, we're going to change the order of our meeting. We're going to briefly break for executive session, and then we'll come back to finish the regular business of the evening. Make a motion for that?
Probably gonna.
I'd make the motion.
Probably going to deal with Councilman Lamia.
Put him on hold.
Call him to another stand.
Call him back.
Sure, put him on hold and then transfer him over.
Is that all right, John?
Or I can call somebody else's number or whatever.
Call someone's cell.
Do you have a different extension in the other room?
Call extension 18. Not right this second.
Oh, two?
18?
18. 1-8.
Okay. All right, so I'll make that motion. If you want to executive session.
Thank you.
Okay, council members, Bills?
Yes.
Keeler?
Yes.
Kelly?
Yes.
Lamia?
Yes.
Weckstein?
Yes.
Rudy?
Yes.
We are going to have the executive session in the other room. We'll be back quickly. Councilmembers.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. It's actually closed.
Go back in the regular session.
Oh, we don't have John yet. Do you want to wait for John to call?
You have a forum.
I have a forum.
Okay.
All right, councilmembers. Keeler?
Yes.
Kelly?
Yes.
Weckstein?
Yes.
Rudy?
Yes.
And?
Lamia.
Councilman Lamia, are you here?
You're here, John?
Yes, I am, John.
Terrific. Okay, we're back in the regular business session. First up on our agenda is the consent agenda.
Mayor, can we amend the consent agenda just to carry to take off the January 3rd, 2015 minutes and carry them to the next minute, at the next meeting? 2 weeks from now, right?
Okay, we're going to carry the minutes to the meeting of February 15th. And are you making a motion on the remaining consent agenda?
I am.
I'm sorry, February 17th.
February 17th, okay. Yes, and I'll make a motion to approve the rest of the consent agenda.
Okay, need a second?
Second.
Councilmembers Keeler?
Yes.
Kelly?
Yes.
Lamia?
Yes.
Weckstein?
Yes.
Rooney?
Yes.
New business this evening is payment of vouchers. Need a motion to approve the voucher list?
So moved.
Motion, need a second?
I'll second it.
Councilmembers Keeler?
Yes.
Kelly?
Yes.
Lamia?
Yes.
Weckstein?
Yes.
Rooney?
Yes.
Okay. We have our first discussion item this evening. That was an item that I had placed on the agenda. Ironically, after our last council meeting, taking to heart Mr. Maroney's comments about publishing well in advance a town hall meeting schedule, so I proposed a year's worth of town hall meetings. That would be in addition to the three open public meetings that we regularly have every month. I'm proposing four additional town hall meetings that would be held once every quarter. We have had town hall meetings every quarter since Sandy. Many people don't notice this. We have not previously published a schedule of the entire year in advance. We've been announcing them 6 weeks in advance. So now we're going to advertise, hopefully, a schedule for the entire year, as long as these dates work with everyone's schedule. Proposing Thursday evenings at 7. Right, Thursday, March 5th. I'd like to take input on the municipal facilities and a plan for public buildings. We've got Thursday, May 14th. I'm proposing a workshop on our hazard mitigation plan. Thursday, September 3rd, I'd like to do a session on property taxes and a deep dive into our regional school tax and the funding formula that results in our extraordinary school tax bill. And then the final one, I'd like, at that point, we will have just passed the 3-year post-Sandy mark, and I think it's going to be very important for us to assess where we are with the Seabright 2020 plan and the various projects. So I propose these four dates and topics for the year. This won't be all the public meetings that we will have, because we will have our budget presentation, and that will happen hopefully on Saturday, February 21st. And we will have additional public meetings to do workshop and get input on some of the various projects that are coming down the pike this year, like the streetscape, like hazard mitigation, etc. So I distributed the list of council members. I need to make sure that this works for them, and I have not inadvertently created a conflict with other dates. And once we get the list blessed, then we will distribute it publicly to a wide audience. Council members, do you have any input on the town hall meetings, the schedules, or otherwise?
That's a good idea.
The second item on the agenda is the beautification master plan. And before this meeting started, I know there was a joint meeting with the beautification committee and the sustainable Seabright committee. So, Councilman Kelly, this is your committee. I'll let you take it away.
Thank you. What the borough did is we went out to, we hired a landscape architect to work with the beautification committee to come up with a beautification master plan for the borough. A lot of them were heavily damaged by Sandy, and quite honestly, a lot of the areas need a little help before Sandy hit too. So we focused on 10 different sites. We selected 10 of the main sites, many of them in town, obviously focusing also on the entranceways of the town. And so we worked with the landscape architects, and we with a goal of building with resilience and also using native plants and so forth to accomplish that. So we came up with two different plans. The first round came in, the plan looked nice, but we wanted to scale a little back based on the estimated cost and also the amount of maintenance that would be required to care for the 10 sites. So we do have a plan that will be on file here for anyone to look at. I also wanted to share it with the rest of the governing body, since only the members of the beautification committee have seen it so far. We also have a the landscape architects from T&M also provided us with a master list of all the plants and trees that they included in this plan, and they did also give us estimated costs for the project. Just to go over briefly, and again, these costs are only estimated. And what one of the other goals of this plan was to have it broken into 10 different sites, so that we could work within our budget and just focus on, you know, whether we do one site or all 10. At least we have a way to break it up and actually keep it in budget, so we can focus on the most important sites first. And but all in, the estimated costs for the final plan would be about $290,000, but that again has, you know, that's just an estimate. Everything would have to go to bid, and that's all 10 sites combined. So that could vary based on if we make any changes to it and so forth. This is just part of a process to go, because a lot of the sites, most of the sites are along Ocean Avenue, it does still have to go through a process of being presented to the state for approval prior to our doing any of these projects, because it could kick back. We just went on our own and started doing these projects along Ocean Avenue, the state could step in and either, it could cause problems for us. We'd have to get approval first. Plus, we're also trying to find the best ways to fund the projects. We do have some money in a beautification trust fund, but, you know, we're also hoping that if with the streetscape grant, that we can also possibly use some of the there is money in there allocated for landscaping, so we're hoping to also just stay with the process, go join through the state, get approval, and then hopefully fund much of what is on this list currently. And, you know, aside from that, also the email to everybody, too. So I didn't have them print out a copy of the trees, because in color and stuff, and I'm sure nobody really needs that on the council, but we would.
I actually am very interested in a copy of that, and would like to receive a copy if you don't mind.
Okay, will do.
Thank you very much.
Sure. But aside from that, you know, I just wanted to present it publicly to everybody and see if anyone had any feedback on it, and or maybe by the next council meeting, if you want to review all the information, and we could have any, I can address anything you have. But aside from that, you know, I just want to thank the beautification committee for working with the landscape architects from T&M to put this plan together.
Councilman, can I ask that a copy of that be made available at Borough Hall, so if any residents want to come and be able to take a look at it, that they could ask to see it and see it?
Yeah, Joe already has it, and that'll be done.
Give it to Chris.
Hello, thank you, Councilman, and to the volunteer committees who spend a lot of time attending meetings and contributing toward the development of this plan. Before we go to remarks from the audience, I received two pieces of correspondence from the BSB that I've been asked to read out loud. BSB is the Businesses of Seabright. The first is a letter addressed to Mayor Long from the BSB as follows. We would like to let you know how very helpful our Chief of Police has been to the business community. Chief Sorrentino is always available to help and listen to our concerns. Most recently, Chief listened to our challenges regarding customer parking and resolved our problem. The BSB would like to send our gratitude and sincere thanks to Chief Sorrentino. It is truly comforting to have our Chief there for us. Sincerely, the Businesses of Seabright, BSB. So I'd like to just add to the governing body's public recognition of our excellent Police Chief Public Safety Director, John Sorrentino. The second letter I have from the BSB is not about the police, but rather subject paid parking. Dear Mayor and Council, as you are aware, Seabright does not have a variety of transportation modes that cities have. Most visitors arrive by car. They will go elsewhere to avoid paying to park, which will result in a decline in visitors if meters are installed. Since downtown Seabright already lacks enough visitors to keep businesses thriving, then reducing that number will be detrimental. Meters will hurt the viability of Seabright. For these reasons, the Businesses of Seabright strongly oppose paid parking. Other ways to produce revenue might be to increase the cost of beach badges and or parking fines. Thank you for the opportunity to be heard in this matter. Respectfully, the Businesses of Seabright, BSB. At that stage, we're at the end of our agenda, and I would like to invite remarks from the audience at this time. We ask you to come forward, state your name and address for our recording. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to be heard on any issue?
Dennis LaFour, 45 Marine, Long Branch. These are hard reality questions. Following that last letter, I foresee a multi-deck parking garage in Seabright eventually, like other coastal communities are doing now, particularly Belmar. The striping plan presentation last Thursday, what is the status on that now? Is it foreseen to be within a resolution within a month or so?
We originally had agreed that we were going to have it on our agenda this evening. Council President Keeler wanted the opportunity to discuss it in more detail, so the council will be taking it on at the workshop meeting next Thursday.
Okay. If I can make a couple of notes on that. I visited Taylor Hardware in Belmar and Jasper Brothers Hardware in the Atlantic Islands. Both have, within their proximity, angled parking and head-on parking. Okay? Then when I go to Home Depot, I look at the distance I have to walk in the parking lot to get to the door of Home Depot. I don't think there's much of an inconvenience here for back-in angle parking in front of Bain's Hardware. And if I have to go things to park a vehicle in the municipal lot to walk across the street, it's still a shorter distance than what I'd have to walk in the Home Depot parking lot to get to the front door. All right, I want to make these points available because, you know, the mayor made an excellent remark. This is going to cost us, if this plan doesn't go through, in engineering costs. Okay, right now the DOT is giving us a gift. When they give us a gift, all right, Seabright should grab it. I don't think Seabright's in an erudite position to start refusing gifts and then in the alternative start paying $120,000 in engineering costs to redo a striping plan, all right, inclusive of bicycle routes, lowering the speed limit to 25, everything else. I like the plan. I support it. I didn't urge council. I'm urging you at the workshop session to review it and support it as well for the next council meeting for a resolution to be posted on it for a vote. That was number one. Number two. If we're going to have the town hall meeting on the budget, okay, that leaves February 21st, that's 18 days. Has the citizens committees on the budget that Councilman Keeler stated would be established, are they already in progress? the citizens' committees on the budget that are supposed to make a presentation for the February 21st town hall meeting on the budget.
Well, not the citizens' committees.
It's not going to be a citizens' committee.
Well, there'll be citizens open to the anyone.
But the committee meetings will be open to the citizens?
Yes, that particular meeting, I believe it's on a Saturday, correct? Yes.
I think, Vince, the council declined to create a special committee that would look only at the budget. It was an idea that was raised but not embraced. And so instead, what we're doing is making a public presentation of the budget.
Okay, no, that's fine. That's good. I endorse that. Thank you. Another hard reality question. Has the mayor and the council ever looked at shared services with the county or other municipalities on engineering, municipal engineering fees and costs and services? If not, I would recommend the consideration of that with the county's shared services program or with other municipal governments within the vicinity, particularly those affected by Sandy. Okay, I would request an explanation of shared services on engineering costs.
We've certainly talked to other communities, but we have not spoken with the county.
Okay, all right, thank you. And the final thing is the splash pad. Okay, I believe that is one of the most underutilized assets of Seabright. Every time I go past it, okay, I envision festivals on the splash pad, craft shows on the splash pads, and you've got the traffic coming back and forth. They'd stop and they'd go for it. And it'd be a plus-plus with the boardwalk on top of the seawall. So I'm requesting consideration of utilization of the splash pad. All right, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Vince. We need you to move here. Other remarks in the audience?
Heather Bedanko, 400 Ocean Avenue. Just on the parking meters, I would just like to, as a resident, speak on behalf of the businesses or in favor of what the businesses are saying. I think that at this point, we can't do anything to hurt the businesses. They're there for us every time we ask them. We go out and we do our Christmas giving and they support us, and they came back after Sandy and it was very difficult for them to do that. And I think that if they're of the very strong opinion that this is going to hurt them at this point for paid parking, you know, maybe it's not the right time for it, or maybe we need to look into other ideas. But I would like to just support the businesses and not have the parking meters at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else to be heard this evening? We did not finish our executive session earlier this meeting. We wanted to try to keep it short, recognizing that we left a crowd sitting in the room. So we have to go back to finish our legal updates from Attorney McNamara. So can we have a motion to...
And we're not coming back this
And we have to come back to close the meeting.
No, no, I know that, but we're not doing any business after
that. No, but that takes us to the end of our agenda.
I don't have anything that will require final action this evening.
Okay, no more action will be taken.
All right, motion to go back into executive session.
Thanks for coming, everybody.
All in favor?
All in favor?